ナモ妙法蓮華経、ナモ妙法蓮華経、ナモ妙法蓮華経。Hi friends, I hope this finds you in good health and secure. Chapter 23. I've talked about this chapter many times. I have a video dedicated to this chapter. There's a long history of misunderstanding, misinterpretation, and tragedy to recent years in regard specifically to this chapter of the Lotus Sutra. And so I have dedicated videos on this channel that are specifically about the Medicine King chapter. One of them has in the title, I forget the entire title, but it says Burning Monks. Please watch that. I will have an annotation in here that will say something about it. Just once again, understand, all of the teachings of Shakyamuni are done through skillful means or expedient devices. In other words, stories and illustrations, and Buddhism is about the mind. So all these stories, even though they include personages, it's like the little boy who cried wolf. Is there a little boy who cried wolf? No, it's a fantasy in order to explore a point, make a point about human behavior, about morals and morals and all sorts of different things, right? Social behaviors, the way the human mind and in a social context, how we interact with one another. So if Buddhism is not that, then it is nothing. The history of Bodhisattva Medicine King. Here we go. At that time, the Bodhisattva Star Constellation King Flower addressed the Buddha, saying, "World-honored one, why does the Medicine King Bodhisattva wander in the Saha world?" In other words, why does this presence, this mindset in the personage of somebody we'll call Medicine King Bodhisattva, why does it exist in the human realm? Why does it exist in the Saha world? That's what this question says. It doesn't say that guy over there, Medicine King, right? That's not what it says. But for the purposes of storytelling, we will embody that nature, that habit energy in a personage so we can talk about it more easily, right? World-honored one, what hundreds of thousands of myriads of kotas of nayutas of distresses the Bodhisattva Medicine King has to suffer, right? This persistent desire seems a desire to suffer. How many, do we know people like that? I can point out a few that I know, that they continuously repeat the same behavior. And at some point you throw up your hands and go, what is wrong with that person? Do they love to suffer? Do they relish the suffering? Don't they see as many times as all the friends and relatives and everyone around them tell them, put a stop to it. Just say this, just do that. They simply can't bring themselves to do something simple and logical. It's almost as though they love their suffering, and they love it because the suffering somehow feeds their ego. The suffering is how they identify themselves, their self, as real. Well, isn't that samsara? Isn't that the core of samsara? Now, to be sure, the story here is not used to indicate how insufferable some people are, but rather that even through this mechanism, this adherence to suffering, that even in this, what we can derive from this story is the tenacity that a person with this kind of perspective, this kind of samsaric self, so stubborn, if they decide to follow the Buddha path, the Bodhisattva way, that they too can attain enlightenment, even then. Oh, well, okay, that story then has merit, because it says that no matter how much samsara has a hold of a person, they can actually use that hold against the samsaric mind itself and demonstrate tremendous, what shall we say, resolve, loyalty, determination for Buddhahood. It may not look pretty to others, but nonetheless, it is the Buddha way, the Buddha path, yes? We don't know what lurks in our minds, let alone others. So let's read through it and see what we can learn, huh? Excellent. Will it be, world-honored one, if you will be pleased to explain a little so that the universal realms of influence, dragon spirits, yakshas, gandharvas, asuras, garudas, kimnaras, mahoragas, human and non-human beings, and the bodhisattvas who have come from other lands, as well as these shravakas, hearing it, will all rejoice. In other words, strip them of their doubts, strip us of our troubling thoughts, and make us see that it doesn't matter how much samsara has a hold on us, that we can attain Buddhahood. Thereupon, the Buddha addressed Bodhisattva Star Constellation King Flower. Of long ago in the past, kalpas ago, incalculable as the sands of the Ganges River, there was a Buddha entitled Sun Moon Brilliance Tathagata. He's worthy of praise, all wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct, well departed, understander of words, peerless leader, controller, teacher of universal realms of influence, Buddha, a world-honored one. That Buddha had 80 kotas of great bodhisattva mahasattvas and a great assembly of shravakas, numerous as the sands of 72 Ganges rivers. This was a tremendous teacher of the law, yeah? The lifetime of that Buddha was 42,000 kalpas, and the lifetime of his bodhisattvas was the same. His domain had no lust, no hells, no hungry ghosts, no animals, no asuras, and no disasters. Right, that's all a reference to the lower realms of influence. So everyone was living a pretty high standard of life condition. Its land was level as one's palm and made of lapis lazuli. It was adorned with jeweled trees, covered with jeweled curtains, hung with flags of jeweled flowers. In other words, a very pleasant and easy place to live. Under all these jewel trees, bodhisattvas and shravakas were seated. Above each of these platforms were 100 kotas of universal realms of influence, performing celestial music and singing praises to the Buddha in homage to him. So the energetic formations around all of these people in this land were very supportive. We might say, living in the higher realms of influence, yes? Then that Buddha taught the Law of Flower Dharma Sutra to the Bodhisattva Loveliness and all the Bodhisattvas and hosts of Shravakas. Wow. This Bodhisattva Loveliness had rejoiced to follow the course of suffering and in the law of the Buddha Sun Moon Brilliance had made zealous progress, wandering about single-mindedly, seeking the Buddha for fully 12,000 years, after which he attained the contemplation of revelation of all forms. Having attained this contemplation, sorry, he was very joyful and reflected thus, saying to himself, "My attainment of the contemplation of revelation of all forms is entirely due to the power resulting from hearing and accepting the Law Flower Dharma Sutra." Myoho Renge Kyo, right? "Let me now pay homage to the Buddha Sun Moon Brilliance and the Law Flower Dharma Sutra. No sooner did he enter into this contemplation than he rained from the sky Mandarava flowers, Mahamandarava flowers, and fine dust of hard and black sandalwood, which filled the sky and descended like a cloud. There rained also incense of inner seashore sandalwood. 6 karshas of this incense were worth a saha world. All this he did in homage to the Buddha. Having made this offering, he arose from contemplation and reflected within himself, saying, though I, by my supernatural power, have paid homage to the Buddha, it is not as good as offering my body." Now, that's an interesting statement. As we've seen in previous chapters, in fact, in the early chapters of the Lotus Sutra, the thing that was holding back all of the monks, bhikshus, bhikshunis, upasakas, upasikas, the 3 lesser vehicles, was this idea that by achieving this false nirvana, they were done. That's the best they could do in this life. They completely cut themselves off from Buddhahood, which is why they were berated so many times throughout the earlier teachings. And Shakyamuni accused them of incorrigible disbelief. Why? Because they were hanging on to their old traditional thoughts, right? This was ancient India. Everything was about returning in a future lifetime and reincarnation. And my gosh, Shakyamuni spent so much time teaching about emptiness and non-permanence and impermanence. Sorry, I couldn't remember the word. And I still weren't getting it. And so he let them go, thinking that at some point they're going to learn enough to get beyond that, and they didn't. Right? So early in the Lotus, he puts his foot down about this. Will you get your heads out of your butts and understand what I've been teaching all along is that Buddhahood is in you. It's right now. So when this Buddha, this Bodhisattva, he's a Bodhisattva at this point, right? He's Buddha. Bodhisattva loveliness, right. So he's going to make offerings to the Buddha. And he says to himself, you know, as amazing as this is, and all these Bodhisattvas that I'm inspiring, and I get this contemplation of the reality of all forms, right? The truth of all phenomena. Let's say it in the way we're familiar. Though I, by my supernatural power, my enlightenment, have paid homage to the Buddha, it's not as good as offering my body, right? Because that's that last final tendril of attachment to the samsaric mind, right? We have a body. That's part of the process of the engine of life, because from this body we emerge a mind, a sentient mind. But that's its only purpose. Identifying this body as something special in Saha world, there's a, you know, that attachment is, it's in the way. We need to be completely in our awareness, our Buddhahood. Then we can see this body just like every other phenomena in the cosmos for what it is, providing for our experience. Not our thingness. It's our experience, our vision, our understanding, our compassion. All of that mental function is what life is about. That doesn't mean none of the rest of it exists. It just means that that's not what it's about. witnessing, observing, being a part of the moment-to-moment momentum of all this, that is truly amazing and hardly conscionable, yeah? So it's not as good as offering my body. And of course, being the person he is in this case, could be she, I make an annotation here before we go on. To understand this story requires that we understand the nature of attachments and the central mechanisms of cravings and clinging. All of our cravings and clinging take shape as our incessant identification of our desired possessions, physical or emotional, etc. These identifications are a constant effort to identify and conjure ourself, quote unquote, in physical form or in, quote, body. Ultimately, it is our physical bodily form that is our deepest attachment, as it is the locus of all our other attachments. This was a part of the hard lesson for those of the three vehicles to relinquish that this teaching worked so diligently to destroy. It is not the goal here to annihilate the body or the physical world, but much more to the point of Buddhism, it is to destroy the mental possession of materialism at its root. It is the mind's contrivances we wish to eliminate, and not the objects of its contrivances, right? So we go on. Thereupon he partook of many kinds of incense, sandalwood, kanduruka, tarushka, prika, aloes and resins, incense, and drank the essential oils of kampaka and other flowers. After fully 1,200 years, he anointed his body with perfumed unguents, and in the presence of the Buddha Sun Moon Brilliance, wrapped himself in a celestial precious garment, bathed in perfume oil, and by his transcendent power, burned his own body. Now you see where I have a tremendous issue with the colorful language used here, but in the way that it's been transmitted, this is taken literally, and many a monk in the centuries, in the millennia that followed, offered their bodies in effigy to what? I mean, this was a very serious practice in China for a long time, and we've seen it in recent history, right in Vietnam. It's so tragic, so senseless, so foolish. There's nothing about that is Buddhism. Buddhism is about the mind. He didn't actually burn his own body. It's a figuration, a way of encompassing the relinquishing of attachments to the body. You don't perform the physical act. It's a mentation. Again, Buddhism is all about the mind. This is a brilliant, pardon the pun, visualization and not an actual fire. That's an annotation, of course. Its brightness universally illuminated worlds fully numerous as the sands of the 80,000 acotis of Ganges rivers, whose Buddhas simultaneously extolled him. Why would they extol him for burning himself? It's not because he lit himself on fire. It's because his transcending his body awakened such a brilliant light. We talk about light all the time, right? From the tuft of hair, from the protuberance on his head, from every pore. That's what we're talking about here. Not a burning flame of smoking flesh. Would that be seen illuminating worlds fully numerous as the sands of 80 kodas of Ganges rivers? No. The act of relinquishing one's identity from the body, that is an act that reverberates and resonates throughout the cosmos. That is a transcendent moment from the Saha world and Samsara to the Saha world and Buddha. Makes sense, right? Good son, this is true zeal. It is called the true law homage to the Tathagata. Offerings of flowers, scents, necklaces, incense, sandal power, unguents, flags, and canopies of celestial silk and incense of inner seashore sandalwood, offerings of such various things as these cannot match it. Nor can the giving of alms, countries, cities, wives, and children match it. In other words, all of these desires that you've overcome, the temporary or the false nirvana, it's all well and good, but when you finally challenge your identity as a singular human being, and instead being the mental awareness and observation of the entire momentum of energy and formation in the realm of form of the cosmos of which you are intimate with, not separate from, now your identity is no longer this you, but the cosmic you, everything as one. Now you sense for all living beings and all non-living beings and all phenomena in the cosmos. Now you've connected with, as it says, Tathagata, the universal engine of life. Not just your Bruce engine or your Adele engine, right? Or your Michaela engine. That's an engine, that's your freight train of karma, but that's just the samsaric you, the saha you. You are the cosmos. You are the stars and planets. You are the momentum of life. Able to perceive itself. Much bigger than this thing. My good son, this is called the supreme gift, the most honored and sublime of gifts, because it is the law homage to the Tathagata. After making this statement, they all became silent. And I have another annotation. I talk a lot in this one. Please notice an essential aspect of this story. That aspect is that the gratitude offered to this offering is for all the incense and beautiful scents and materials being offered. Never do the Buddhas offer gratitude for the burning of flesh. The point is once again made in the statement that the body, quote unquote, continued burning for 1,200 years. After reading this sutra thus far, it is obvious that this is a reference to the propagation of the Lotus Dharma Sutra, to teach and read, recite, copy, and inspire others to do so for 1,200 years. The burning of the body is a visual device to reason that the teaching of this sutra is of a value so great and incomprehensible that the mundane body of this life is not a thing to be attached or enamored of. As said before, this identification of self within the vessel of the body is the last vestige of samsara to overcome. Thank you, Sifu. Well said. We continue. His body continued burning for 1,200 years, after which his body came to an end. Are we talking about his flesh and blood body? No. We're talking about his embodiment of Tathagata. In other words, Buddha. And his influence of Buddha penetrated well beyond his Saha world lifetime. by penetrating other sentient beings, not by floating around like an Amazon cloud, dropping cloud services on people, not like that. That's material. We're talking about the influence of Buddha, the teaching of Buddha, Myoho Renge Kyo. The Bodhisattva Loveliness, after making such a law offering as this, on his death, was again born in the domain of the Buddha Sun Moon Brilliance, being suddenly metamorphosed, sitting cross-legged in the house of King Pure Virtue, to whom as his father he immediately spoke thus in verse. Now this is all very fable-like, right? This is the influence of this man's life as it goes beyond his Saha world existence. Again, language is a virus here. I'm not saying his life persisted. I'm saying his influence, that teaching, what he brought to bear in his sincerity and resolve as Myoho Renge Kyo reverberated for 1,200 years through those he taught. And those they thought, remember the 50th person? My nose is going to be a challenge. But we'll get by that obstacle, yes? No, O great king, he says, sojourning in that other abode, I instantly attained the contemplation of the revelation of all forms, and devotedly performed a deed of great zeal by sacrificing the attachment to the body I loved. So once he reached his renge, his aha moment, right? In Nichiren term, when he finally fused with his mandala and opened that Gohonzon mind, raised his eyelid on the Buddha eye, right? There's no turning back. Now you got to stay there. You got to go there. You got to keep repeating to keep that eye open. That eye opened gave him great zeal, great resolve, confidence. Yes, it is here. It is mine to have and control. And therefore, I have tremendous compassion for all other beings and must instruct them, demonstrate to them, be for them this confidence, this zeal. They must also know. So what he sacrificed, I'm not sure I like that term, what he released, right, was his attachment to this bodily identification. After uttering this verse, he spoke to his father, saying, "The Buddha Sun Moon Brilliance is still existing as of long ago. Having first paid homage to that Buddha, I obtained the dharani of interpreting the utterances of all the living, and moreover heard this Law Flower Dharma Sutra in 800,000 myriad kotas of nayutas, kankaras, bimbaras, asobkayas of verse." There wasn't a single area of his life, his witnessing, that this true law didn't completely penetrate. Understanding, knowledge, right? The Buddha wisdom we talk about. "Great king, I ought now to return and pay homage to that Buddha." Who's returning? This floating little embodied? No. This influence is still, after his death, the influence itself, as it appears in other minds, has its own kinetics, momentum. This is why it continues to affect those that come into contact with it for years and years and years, right? We radiate this life condition, and where it touches is also inspired. Having said this, he thereupon took a seat on a tower of the precious seven jewels. There they are again. Arose in the sky, as high as seven tala trees, and on reaching that Buddha, bowed down to his feet and folding his 10 fingers, extolled the Buddha in verse. Countenance most wonderful, radiance illuminating the universe. Formerly I paid homage to you, now again I return to behold. Then the Bodhisattva Loveliness, having uttered this verse, spoke to that Buddha, saying, world-honored one, the world-honored one is still present in the world. In other words, the Tathagata is still witnessable, observable in the Saha world. It's the engine of life. Why wouldn't it be? Stating the obvious. Thereupon, the Buddha, Sun, Moon, Brilliance, addressed the Bodhisattva Loveliness. My good son, the time of my nirvana has come. The time of my extinction has arrived. You may arrange my bed. Tonight I shall enter parinirvana. This is sounding a little autobiographical, isn't it? Again, he commanded the Bodhisattva Loveliness, my good son, I commit the Buddha law to you. And I deliver to you all my bodhisattvas and chief disciples, my law of perfect enlightenment, also my 3,000 great thousandfold world made of the precious seven jewels. Its jewel trees and jewel towers and my celestial attendants, I also entrust to you whatever relics may remain after my extinction. Let them be distributed and paid homage to far and wide. Let some thousands of stupas be erected. The Buddha, Sun, Moon, Brilliance, having thus commanded the Bodhisattva Loveliness in the last division of the night, entered into parinirvana. Thereupon, the Bodhisattva Loveliness, seeing the Buddha was extinct, mourned, was deeply moved and distressed, and ardently longed for him. Then, piling up a pyre of inner seashore sandalwood, he paid homage to the body of that Buddha and burned it. After the fire died out, he gathered the relics, made 84,000 precious urns, and erected 84,000 stupas high as the threefold world, adorned the banner towers, hung with flags and canopies, and with many precious bells. Now, the sharp-eared amongst you would have said, wow, how is it, if you're taking this story literally, that a mere bodhisattva burned his body and it illuminated 12,000 years, but now a Buddha, a full embodiment of Tathagata, dies, and we casually read here that with a bunch of incense, he burns his Buddha's bodies to get the relics, his bones and whatever's left over, and enshrine them in stupas. This all happens within a few hours, evidently. Do you see the contradiction? It's not a contradiction if you understand the story. There's a difference between burning a flesh and blood body, which is bereft of life, no longer alive, extinct, right? And then illuminating thousands and thousands of lands, and right, that's the teaching illuminating, not the burning flesh. Then the Bodhisattva Loveliness again reflected within himself, saying, though I have paid this homage, my mind is not yet satisfied. Let me pay still further homage to the relics. Thereupon, he addressed the Bodhisattvas and chief disciples, as well as universal realms of influence, dragons, yakshas, and all the hosts, saying, so these are influences in his mind, right? Pay attention with all your minds, for I'm now about to pay homage to the relics of the Buddha, Sun, Moon, Brilliance. Having said this, he thereupon, before the 84,000 stupas, burned his arms. All right, the symbolism is rife. with their 100 felicitous signs for 72,000 years in homage to him, and led a numberless host of seekers after Shravaka ships and countless asamkayas of people to set their minds on perfect enlightenment, causing them all to abide in the contemplation of revelation of all forms. Did he really burn his arms? No, he put his arms to work proselytizing, propagating. It's just his method of exploring his commitment is through this kind of disgusting ritual of self-immolation. But there's no immolation in Buddhism, right? This is mental enforcement, detachment. And for Bodhisattva Loveliness, it had to do with burning flesh. But he wasn't really burning his flesh. He was committing his flesh to being unimportant outside of the propagation of the a priori law. Right? He just burned a Buddha's body in mere hours. Maybe less. It doesn't really give us a time, but certainly within the time he was there, an actual time period. Whereas he burns his arms for thousands and thousands of years. Come on. Then all those bodhisattvas, universal realms of influence, men, asuras, and others, seeing him without arms, were sorrowful and distressed and lamented, saying, "This bodhisattva Loveliness is indeed our teacher and instructor, but now his arms are burned off and his body is deformed." He must have made quite an impression on them. And here I have an annotation. "And now we will be given the example that to relinquish one's attachment to physical self is not a true destruction of the physical, but a transformation of self as unattached usefulness of those very same attributes or physical apparatus, free of identification." Thereupon the Bodhisattva Loveliness in the Great Assembly made this vow, saying, "Having given up both my arms, I shall yet assuredly obtain a Buddha's golden body. If this assurance be true and not false, let both my arms be restored as they were before." Poof! As soon as he had made this vow, his arms were of themselves restored. All brought to pass through the excellence of his bodhisattva felicitous virtue and wisdom. Right. Poof! His arms are back. Come on. Is it not obvious this is a fable? I know you're saying, "Yes, Sylvain, I'm not stupid, I get it." But my sentiments and my passion for this is that I still cannot believe for thousands of years people actually took this literally and burned themselves in the street. "At that moment, the 3,000 great thousandfold world was shaken in six ways. The sky rained down various flowers and universal realms of influence, and men all attained that which they had never before experienced." Wow. Right? The Buddha then addressed the Bodhisattva star constellation King Flower. "In your opinion, what say you? Was the Bodhisattva Loveliness some other person? It was indeed the present Medicine King Bodhisattva. His self-sacrifice and gifts were of such countless hundreds of thousands of myriads of kotas, of nayutas in number as these. Star Constellation King Flower, if anyone with his mind set on and aiming at perfect enlightenment is able to burn..." Annotation, "the fires of desire and attachment, or as stated in the Four Noble Truths, cease the formations of," end quote, or end. the fingers of his hand, or even a toe of his foot in homage to a Buddha's stupa, he will surpass him who pays homage with domains, cities, wives, children, and his 3,000 great thousandfold land with its mountains, forests, rivers, pools, and all its precious things. Right? You can heap all kinds of treasures at your altar, if you will, at whatever you represent Buddha. And Nichiren gives us this tool of this altar with the mandala to open in our minds the bodhisattva gate, to open our Buddha eye. And you could bring every gift known to man. All the valuation is samsaric. It's all ego. But let go of your attachment to your very, where you're embodying all this identity. Strip yourself of your ego, your basis for valuing everything, to experience the universe as one, the momentum of life itself. And you will attain, what is it? The law of all forms? Again, if anyone offers a 3,000-fold, great thousand-fold world full of seven precious things in homage to the Buddhas, great bodhisattvas, Pratyekabuddhas, and arhats, the merit this man gains is not equal to the surpassing happiness of the person who receives and keeps but a single fourfold verse of this law, Flower Dharma Sutra, the Daimoku. Namo Myo Renge Kyo. And here again, annotation, is the metaphor of releasing the attachments or mental clinging to our bodily self. The ultimate source of our identification, discernments, and discriminations that wrap us into the illusions of ownership, time, and cravings. Ultimately, as stated in previous chapters, it is the acceptance and understanding of the Lotus Dharma Sutra that explodes the samsaric delusion into the timeless, ongoing momentum of life with no limitations. It's all potential, right? No limitations. All right. Yeah, that's long enough. How much is left of this chapter? Yeah, a good bit. All right. We will continue in the next video. Thank you. Thank you for listening, paying attention. I trust you'll all be experts now. When you hear from those who have been misled, misguided in other groups or sects about this. I was talking to a friend on the phone not long ago, telling me about the amazing holiness of people setting themselves on fire, monks. And I couldn't hold back my ire. And it confounded him for a little bit, but hopefully I inspired him. He's usually really good after we have our moments to seek further information. And he's a smart man. It's just there's so much propaganda misleading people out there about Buddhism, about how it's practiced, what monks are, what they're doing, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But it is the one and driving purpose of this sangha and every effort of this resource to just do away with all of that magic and mystic crap. It's not Buddhism, but it's everywhere, right? People love their little passions, and it's religion has taken over the world. Who was it that said religion is the opiate of the masses? Buddhism is not a religion for that very reason, because it absolutely requires of you to be reasonable, right? To reason things out, to use your mind. Buddhism is about the mind. No magic, no woo-woo. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much for being on this path, for supporting this Sangha, liking, subscribing, helping to grow the Sangha. Those of you who are making purchases of ebooks and print books, proper mandalas, your tremendous support, thank you so much. Patrons, you are universal worthy bodhisattvas. All. So, thanks again. Take care of your health. I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now.